sleep. Some people go right to sleep, others take longer.
The Outline, World Dispatch. It's Thursday, January 25th, 2018. I'm Adrienne Jeffries. Today on The Dispatch, we take you inside North Korean research labs and the people who pay journalists to promote brands in their articles. Here's The Dispatch.
The future.
James T. Green is a producer here at The Outline.
How were you introduced to Kim Hyung-soo?
I was introduced to Kim Hyung-soo through Teach North Korean Refugees.
Andrada Fiskatian is a freelance journalist.
He's 53. He has a degree in biology that he got in North Korea. And when he got this degree, he wanted to change the world with his research. But actually, the country had a different mission for him. The country wanted him to figure out how great leader Kim Il-sung at the time and his son Kim Jong-il could eat without getting fat.
8분 대답은 북한은 용구원 하면
He ended up in a research institute. It's called Mamsumugang Institute, Long Life Health. At this research institute, there were 100 scientists and 30 assistants working to help the Kims live longer lives.
Like, how does this work? How does this work?
They wanted to come up with food that could enhance the health of the dictators. Mm. And whenever they came up with a result, it was immediately sent to the Kims. They had studies on Italian olive oil, on fiber. They added fiber to the food the Kims were eating. And they even studied a sweet Chinese fruit whose sugar content isn't entirely absorbed by the body.
Did any of these things, like, actually work?
I think it's hard to tell, because the scientists had little access to Western science. By American standards, it's quite challenging to be a researcher in North Korea, because chemists, for instance, have to find smugglers to sell them reagents brought in from China. Whenever there's a problem, you have to find a solution yourself. Nobody is going to help you.
Did they end up making any big findings, like these researchers?
The defector told me that relevant research won't be published in international journals, but the sources that I talked to said that scientists in North Korea have developed an artificial knee joint, an ultrasound machine, and more recently, a CT scanner. Nuclear and chemical weapons get priority, the defector told me, and research into the health of the ruling family is also important for North Korea.
So what were these like research facilities like?
네, 16번 대답입니다. 예, 물론 북한도 예, 연구사들 중에 많은 유학생,
Some of them, the top secret ones, were surrounded by electric fences.
Wow.
Researchers weren't allowed to tell their families what are they working on, and Kim Hyung-soo remembers the case of a friend of his who disappeared because at some point he told someone what he was working at. So,
does he know what happened to that friend?
No.
Wow. Did they end up like getting anything in return? Like, were they like at least paid well or anything? Or,
well, by North Korean standards, if you're a researcher, you don't have a very high salary, but I think it's the same in Western Europe and the US. And at some point, the defector told me that women are not that interested in marrying researchers because they don't have high enough salaries.
That reminded me of the thing you wrote about Abik Seol Hui.
Yeah. There was a biologist who said she could make a plant grow three times bigger. And at some point, she was pronounced a secret hero of the country. She hoped to manufacture oil from that plant and fix the oil shortage. There was even a film made about her, The 14th Winter. It was named in honor of her 14 years of research. North Korean citizens were forced to watch this movie. They had to write reviews and even discuss it in open public debates. And when North Korean researchers publish in local journals, their articles begin by citing the teachings of the supreme leaders. Research is to them honorable, revolutionary task for the people.
26번 대답. 네, 연구사들이 국가 지도자 뭐 이자 같은 이런
The defector told me that scientists don't believe what the propaganda feeds them, but they cannot discredit it either. So they have to say what the party tells them to say.
There was a band, right, that like was making music in this style?
There's this band, Moranbong, that's ABBA meets Spice Girls kind of band. They've launched a song a couple of years ago. It's called Let's Study. The lyrics read, knowledge is power, so when we devote our passion to it, our science and technology will flourish. I think North Korea, like the countries in the former Eastern Bloc, really needs skilled people to reverse engineer machines that are made in Western Europe or the US. So they need people well enough educated in science and technology.
What's Kim Hyung-soo up to now?
He now lives in Seoul, South Korea. He escaped North Korea in 2009. He's now a human rights activist trying to help North Korean refugees.
Andrada Fiskutan is a writer in Bucharest, Romania. Thanks, Andrada.
You're welcome.
Power.
So Dmitry Mihov writes for The Next Web, which is a prominent tech blog.
John Christian is a contributing writer here at The Outline.
So Mihov got a message on LinkedIn from a woman calling herself Evie Prokopi. Prokopi didn't quite spell it out in the first message, but knowing what he did about the industry, Mihov was immediately suspicious. And sure enough, a few messages later, Prokopi made it clear she wanted to pay him to write about the clients of a PR firm that she said that she worked for. Mihov was bent out of shape about this, as many journalists are these days, so he decided to play along with the game a little bit and try to extract a little bit of information from Prokopi about perhaps what firm she worked for or specific clients. And in fact, it worked. Prokopi looped him into an email conversation with a specific PR firm, and that person, a few days later, forwarded a specific request to Mihov. She wanted him to mention a specific cryptocurrency startup called the Taklamakan Network.
Is there a term for this practice, this paying to insert brand mentions or links into articles that readers think are not advertisements?
One of the writers I talked to, who asked that we not use his name, used the word payola, which is a historical term in radio for when record companies pay DJs to play specific tracks. And I thought that had a certain resonance because, you know, the way the media on the internet works now is we have these vast contributor networks of people who are writing for all types of reasons, and it seems that some people in the PR and marketing industries have discovered that one way to get coverage from these people is just to pay them off, and that reminds me a lot of trying to boost a specific artist by paying off the people at the radio. So I think that's a compelling term.
So Mihov said no to this ultimately, but we know that other journalists and bloggers who don't necessarily consider themselves journalists have said yes. When they accept payment for mentions like this, what does the story look like on the website? Does it look different to the reader?
I think it can take all kinds of forms. Sometimes the articles are clearly marked as being by a site's contributor network, and sometimes that comes with a disclaimer of one type or another that that differentiates that type of content from a regular story on the site. But other times it can look very much like a regular story on Forbes or Entrepreneur or Inc. You know, a person, when I come across a Forbes story on Google News, I'm not necessarily, you know, looking for that. I don't necessarily understand precisely what that means. And I think that's important.
What's the content of these stories?
Some are sort of fascinatingly awful, you know, filled with typos and formatting irregularities. Others look very professional. The articles I reviewed by some of the writers who disclosed that they accept payments like these in a previous story, and these were people who wrote for Fast Company and Entrepreneur and places like that, looked very much like a regular above board story on that platform, and there was nothing in those stories that showed that you know, disclosed that there was a financial relationship of any kind.
Are the bloggers who participate in this writing original stories?
In some cases, they certainly are. But others have told me that what happens is that the marketing agency provides an article to them that was provided by a ghostwriter, and then they post it, they submit it to the site as if they wrote it themselves. So in fact, in some cases, it sounds as though they had no hand in creating the content that runs under their byline.
You reached out to some editors from these publications. What did they say?
We did hear back from editors and representatives of a number of these publications, and to their credit, they were horrified to hear that this might be going on. Jason Pfeiffer, the editor-in-chief of Entrepreneur, said that the site has a zero-tolerance policy for this kind of thing, that it's prohibited by the writer's guidelines, and that whenever it's discovered, they take swift action, not only by removing a contributor from the system, but also notifying any other publications they might have written for, which I thought was a robust response. And we heard variations on that from many other of the publications where this may be going on.
Are these publications strapped for cash?
I don't know about the financial details of Forbes or Entrepreneur or the Huffington Post. I do think that in the past 5 years or so, there's been a relentless drive for cheaper and cheaper content. And one way that's been accomplished ever since the early days of the Huffington Post is by building up contributor networks of volunteers, basically, who are, you know, engaged with the subject material that a publication wants to cover, but who are willing to do so for free for the exposure. And that can work wonderfully. That can be a great way to surface voices who aren't heard from otherwise. But I think it seems like we're now discovering that it can also lead to ugly conflicts of interest. I think if you don't pay your writers, some of those writers may discover their own ways to get paid.
John, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me on.
Today, we featured stories by Andrada Fiscutien and John Christian. That's it for The Dispatch. I'm Adrienne Jeffries. Thanks for listening. This will actually be my last time hosting The Dispatch. I have decided to cast myself out into the cold and try my hand at freelance reporting, but Aaron Edwards and other members of the fantastic Outline staff will be taking over the show, and I may pop back here once in a while. The Dispatch will be back Monday with more stories.